I think having the experience I did of the instability just made me even more closed. And dance and movement became this incredible release for me. It was a way for me to kind of escape as well, you know, all of the kind of trauma of my childhood.
World-famous ballerina Misty Copeland has an incredible story to share. When she discovered ballet at the age of 13, she was living in motel rooms and struggling to find a place to sleep between her five siblings. Thanks to a ballet class offered at the Boys and Girls Club and a mentor that took special interest in her abilities, Misty was on pointe shoes within 3 months. And a true prodigy, she began performing professionally less than a year after that. Misty's mentor and teacher from the Boys and Girls Club invited her to live in her home so that she could provide the stability that Misty needed to focus all of her time and energy on ballet. From there, Misty continued to excel in every aspect of the ballet world. On June 30th of 2015, she became the first African-American woman to be promoted to principal dancer in America. Since that time, she's used her voice to promote inclusion and diversity in ballet through her foundation. You are going to love hearing from Misty. Do you feel like other moms have life all figured out? Well, as the mother of seven, I can tell you that we are all just doing our best and making it up as we go along. But at least we have each other. I'm Vanessa Quigley, and welcome to the Mom Force podcast brought to you by Chatbooks. Towards the end of our interview, Misty shares her ultimate mom hack, and I thought I would share a mom hack of my own. Chatbooks. Now that I am officially a grandma, I cannot get enough pictures of my granddaughter, and I am loving our Mauve subscription. That's her name, Mauve Iola. Isn't that so cute? My daughter fills her chatbook series with all of the adorable photos of Mauve each month, and then, lucky me, she sends me a copy. It's the next best thing to actually holding that sweet little cherub in my arms. With our ongoing chapbook series, you can choose from a cadence of 4, 6, or 12 books per year, depending on how many photos you want to print. And of course, you can customize the covers. I am loving our pink ombre covers for Mauve right now. All right, for all you new chapbookers listening, use the code MOMFORCE for 20% off your first book. Download the Chapbooks app today or check out the link in our show notes. Happy chapbooking. All right, on to the episode. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Mom Force, Misty. I am so glad that you're here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, Misty, you are an author, a world-famous ballerina, a philanthropist, an activist, and as of 2 years ago, a mother. We have so much to talk about. But to kick things off, since we believe in the power of the story behind photos here at Chatbooks, let's start by talking about a photo that has a fun backstory.
You know, I've decided I'm going to choose an album of photos that I have.
Okay. I love it.
That I've created since I've had my son Jackson, and it's titled Tears, and it's full of photos of Jackson crying. And it started out as something that, like, I was just like, these photos are heart-wrenching. And as a new mom, it was like so difficult for me to see. And like the more experience I have, and like, you know, just the more comfortable Jackson becomes in his skin, like it's funny. So this album has just like evolved, and it's just to me like this hilarious album of like him just being the drama queen that he is. And I love it.
Now, are you ever crying in some of these photos too? Because I remember baby crying. I'm crying. My husband's crying.
on the other side of the camera.
Yeah, but sometimes the best way to handle the hard stuff is just to laugh about it.
And totally.
And there is something really sweet about a newborn cry. I mean, depending on how long it goes on, but it is also darling. My daughter's actually visiting right now. She has a 2-month-old. And when she starts to cry, it's just like, oh, it's so cute. But again, I'm just a grandma, so I don't have to deal with it all the time. So good. I love it. I know I'm all about documenting the good, the bad, and the ugly, because it's all such an important part of the story.
I agree.
So good. Well, Misty, your story is fascinating. You come from a family of 6 kids, which I love because I also come from a big family. I'm actually the oldest of 12. Oh. And I know it's... You don't see families that big very often.
No.
Those big family dynamics I love so much. And I actually have 7 children of my own. And so I'm so curious about your family background. And I know that you went through a lot of difficulties in your childhood. And so I was wondering, can you tell us a little bit about that and maybe what that family dynamic is like and what it's like now today?
Yeah. So my mother was adopted. So she didn't really have that big, you know, kind of family environment where there was like a lot of stability. And so I, mm-hmm. you know, from what she has shared with me and my siblings is that that was like her number one goal in life was to create, you know, a stable family environment for herself or do her best to, you know, with the tools that she had and what she had been shown. So she was an only child adopted by older parents who passed when she was young, and she ended up kind of moving around and living with adopted cousins and aunts and things like that. So she kind of went out on her own at a young age. She became a professional cheerleader for the Kansas City Chiefs football team when she was like 17 or something like that. Like she was very young, a natural performer and mover, and a huge football fan. And that was really the reason why she wanted to become a cheerleader. So she Love could it. Be right there on the field. And then she started having kids at 19. She had her first four was with my father. We were born in Kansas City, Missouri. And when I was 2 years old, they divorced and she moved to Los Angeles. And that was really where I feel like my memories started. You know, that's what I considered home was in California, in Southern California. So within 3 years, she had her fifth child, my little sister, Lindsay, by my stepfather. And then she divorced him. And with her, I think it was her fourth husband, she had my sixth sibling, Cameron. So, you know, I feel like as much as she wanted to make, you know, create something different from what she experienced, sometimes it's really hard when you don't have an example set for you or yeah. someone that's helping guide you or family to support you, you know. So we had a pretty like unstable, chaotic upbringing. But what she gave us was each other, which to me is like, it's the best thing in life is like having family, having people that you can call on. And for me, having like a lot of siblings, you know, they were my best friends growing up, especially when we were moving from, you know, different schools. And like, they were the people I could always rely on. Like I knew they were going to be there, but you know, there was always a lot of love in the house and music being played. And that's kind of where my love of performing came from. It was watching my mom dance around the house and sing and show us what she used to do in performances. And I started choreographing at the age of 7. So it, you know, it kind of blossomed from there. And my siblings didn't really understand it and didn't really have the same experience and passion. Like I really used movement as a way to express all of the things I was feeling inside. You know, I'm the fourth of six children. I'm naturally an introvert. And so I think having the experience I did of the instability just made me even more closed. And dance and movement became this incredible release for me. It was a way for me to kind of escape as well, you know, all of the kind of trauma of my childhood.
Right. Well, as you were talking, I was just another reminder that there's no such thing as a perfect family, right? We are all, as mothers, even you and I, we're doing the best we can with the experiences that we've had and the knowledge that we have, and we're going to make mistakes. And so it's so important to have grace for those, you know, for our parents, for our siblings as we go through this life. But also, I loved hearing you say that your siblings are your best friend, because my husband and I just got back from a trip with how many of our kids? Four of them? Five of them? There were six of us. Four of them. Four of our kids. Oh my gosh. And watching them love on each other and support each other and cheer. You know, all of my kids have been through some really hard things these last couple of years. And my husband and I were commenting that, like, you know, I wouldn't have volunteered to go through all the hard stuff that we've been through, but watching them support and love and cheer each other on, there's like nothing better. That's like the only thing that matters to me, that my kids have those relationships, because I'm going to go one day. Like, we're going to be gone, and I want them to have each other. So
absolutely.
I love that. And then also the dance became this way to help you process the trauma. I've recently finished reading Body Keeps the Score. I don't know if you've read that book.
But I haven't.
It's very powerful and talks about how movement, you know, helps process trauma. And I've come to know that trauma is, there's a wide range, right? It's very personal, you know, what trauma is to you. And I'm so grateful that you found that. as a young girl, I started dancing as well. And I remember something that I will, you know, little tea trauma. I was dancing in my kitchen. We had a really big, like, floor to ceiling wall mirror in front of the pantry. And I was dancing and just loving life and expressing myself without a care in the world. And then I noticed that my dad was in the background watching me, and he had this big smile on his face. And then when he saw me see him, he started laughing. I'm sure just in joy of, like, right, seeing me be in my innocence. But I was traumatized by thinking he's laughing at me, and I completely closed down. And that was it for me for dance. I was like, nope, not doing it. I became so self-conscious. It wasn't this personal, like, outlet for me to express myself. And it wasn't until I was 20 years old and I was in college and I wanted to major in music, dance, theater. I'm a singer, and I had to all of a sudden catch up with all this dance to be able to apply for this program. And as a 20-year-old, I enrolled in ballet. And there I am my pink and black in front of this giant mirror, my bigger body and a lot of more life experiences and emotions. I cried regularly in that ballet class. Like, it was just such a vulnerable being in front of those mirrors. First of all, there's no hiding anything. And then there's something about the movement and the beauty of the music, everything. It was just such an emotional thing. So I'd love to hear, as you started discovering ballet and learning technique, how did that bless you?
I mean, I love that you said, I mean, I'm sorry that you had that experience, but I love that you've said everything that you said, because I think that you could have such positive experiences in that vulnerability, but it also can be really traumatic. I mean, one of the reasons I started my foundation and started this free ballet class, it's a program called Be Bold, is to really try and give young people a different experience. Like, a lot of young people go into ballet and don't feel supported. And when you're in such a vulnerable, I mean, you're practically naked. You're in leotard and tights, and you're in front of a mirror, and you can't really give any input. You're just kind of being told what to do and receiving information. It's such a vulnerable space to be in. And so, you know, it's my goal at this point to try and make the ballet community, the ballet world, a safer and better place for young people to be able to explore no matter what they go on to do. But I was very fortunate to have that experience. I was introduced to ballet at 13. So I was late to the game, not as late as you, but I was catching up as well at 13 years old, you know, with the idea in my mind that I wanted to become a professional. So that's pretty late. If, you know, typically professional dancers will start between the ages of 16 and 19. So I had a lot of catching up to do, but I was in an environment where I was taken into the local ballet school on full scholarship because my teacher specifically came to the Boys and Girls Club because she was looking for more diverse students to give opportunities to that wouldn't otherwise be exposed to this art form, she felt. So, you know, I ended up living with her and her 3-year-old son and her husband. So she was a new mom, and it was so wild that she kind of embraced me and took me into her home and saw the potential in me, and also knew that it was more than just the training. She saw that I needed to be in an environment where I was going to be nurtured. I was going to have food on the table every night. I was going to be getting enough sleep. And all of those things weren't really, I wasn't able to do that in my home environment. I mean, we were moving from motels, you know, living in people's homes, sleeping on floors, taking, you know, hour and a half bus rides to get to school. So she really was thinking, I think, about me as, like, as a whole child and how she was going to prepare me the best way she could for this possible career. So, you know, I had such a beautiful and positive experience when it comes to, like, the training and even the unique and rare experience it is to be a Black or brown girl in ballet. And I feel like she really made the environment as safe and comfortable as it could have been. Of course, all of that would change when I became a professional and moved to New York and wasn't in this kind of safe bubble, but she really set me up.
Well, I know so many parents today stress about finding the right dance club or the right teacher or the right coach for their kids. I can't imagine how your mom felt saying, yes, you can go live with this other family to pursue your dreams.
It was
I really
crazy.
Tried to wrap my mind around that. But at the same time, you want to give your child the best opportunity. Mm-hmm. And you are considered a prodigy, you know, from the very beginning. I think I read that you were on point shoes within 3 months of starting ballet. I mean, that's insane. Yeah. Do you have any tips for parents who are trying to find the right path for their kids to develop their talents?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say that first and foremost is really like hearing them. You know, the, if it's something that they're really passionate about and want to do, then I think it's so important to support them and listen to the type of support they need. You know, for me, I needed my mother's verbal blessing. Like I needed to hear her say it, but I felt that I was getting everything I needed from my teacher in terms of what that training looked like. You know, and so I think that it's important to, of course, be hands-on, but not, you know, kind of overwhelm. And again, just kind of listen to them. I think it's, of course, important in the beginning to nurture and expose them to different things. But, you know, I think that's from what I've experienced with so many young dancers and so many dancers that I came up with at American Ballet Theatre that never felt like they were doing it for themselves. And once you get to a certain point, if you don't have that fire deep down inside you and that passion, it's just, you can't do it. You know, it takes so much heart and soul to kind of stay on that journey. And that's just, I guess, what I'm navigating with my son. I've always been, because I have so many mom friends of mine that are ex-ballet dancers that say, I will never put my child in ballet. And I'm just like, it breaks my heart. But it's because they don't want them to experience a lot of the things they did. But I feel like they're missing out on such an incredible opportunity. And I never have felt that way about Jackson. I want him to dance and to experience it all, but I kind of want him to show that real passion and interest. And he's naturally done it on his own, which is so wild. I'm like, it's really in the genes. It's really in his DNA. He has seen one, he saw one photo of a ballerina, Maya Plesetskaya, a very famous ballerina, and he was obsessed with it. And so I was like, I think it was around like a little over a year that I was like, I guess I'll start showing him some ballet videos. And I wasn't showing him me. I was showing him, you know, great, great ballerinas. And that's what he wants to watch now. He literally sits and watches full-length ballets, you know, and I'm just trying to kind of listen to him and follow, you know, what he's interested in and support him.
Yeah. I think it's important as moms to, or as parents to just expose our kids to a variety of things until they find the thing that they are self-motivated to chase after. And, you know, I signed all my girls up. I have three daughters. They all got signed up for ballet at 3 years old because, you know, it's so fun to dress them up in the little outfits and everything. And none of them really developed a passion for dance. But I think it just exposed them to this beautiful art form. Also, as I was listening to you talk, I'm remembering I took my kids to see the Nutcracker once, and one of my sons, who's now 25, he was probably 6 at the time. The last one I would have expected to be absolutely riveted the entire time. But it was just like this sweet thing. And I'm like, I'm so glad he had this chance to experience this beautiful art form. He now is like the lead singer and the songwriter for a rock band. But it is all art, right?
I love it.
Being able to expose your kids to the wide range of art available is so beautiful. You mentioned the word fire, and all of a sudden I thought of this book, Firebird, that you wrote. So beautiful. And I know you like the iconic role that launched you into the stratosphere. But there's this quote in the back of the book that I love. You say, "When I opened up ballet books, I didn't see myself. I saw an image of what a ballerina should be, and she wasn't me. Brown with tendrils sweeping her face. I needed to find me. I want to expand the idea of beauty and art." And I know this has been so important in all of the work that you have done and your advocacy. Talk to us more about the changes that you are seeing and that is helping to make the future of ballet brighter for everyone.
Yeah, thank you for reading that. You know, it's always been really important for me, you know, in thinking about why I'm here and what I'm leaving behind. And I think something that's so beautiful about the ballet world that maybe is often that people don't know about or it's overlooked is this way of kind of passing down knowledge that's just kind of ingrained into the ballet technique. Of course, there's ways of documenting, you know, choreography and steps and things like that, but it's very rarely used, especially today. And so it's really been this kind of like mentorship that's passed down from one ballet master to the next or one choreographer to the next from the original person from like, I don't know, the 1800s or the 1600s, which is such a cool thing to know that these things are passed down like stories from one mouth to the next. And so there's something so beautiful in that mentorship, which was the inspiration behind writing Firebird, though it's inspired by the role of the Firebird, the actual book is about the relationship between an older ballerina who's showing a young dancer, you know, that they too can succeed if they put in the work and that they have someone that's really helping and guiding them. And so that's really been, I think, the kind of this guiding force for me throughout my career, is kind of setting an example for the next generation and doing my best to use my platform and use my voice to address issues that I think the ballet world has often been afraid to kind of touch, especially around race, when it comes to body image, when it comes to gender issues. And, you know, I think someone in my position, the more I talk about and kind of normalize that people experience this and that it's something that needs to change, I think the more change we're going to see. And so over the last handful of years, I've seen the most shift throughout the pandemic and post George Floyd's murder and Black Lives Matter. I've seen a real shift, which I, to be honest, like, of course, I'm never going to give up on this passion of mine. But to be honest, I never imagined I would see it in my lifetime as a dancer, to see real, like, kind of systemic change within these institutions. Even looking at, there's been such a big turnaround in terms of artistic staff, artistic directors, executive directors in major ballet companies. And so many of them have brought in women, which has made such a huge change in the way these companies are being led. And it's just been a real shift, especially having people of color on the educational side of things. To have teachers who look like the students they're teaching is so vital and important. But it's work I'm going to forever be doing. Again, it's the reason I started the Misty Copeland Foundation. And I have this ballet program. It's still pretty new, but that's the work that I'm really passionate about right now.
Yeah. Well, representation and diversity of all kinds is important in every single aspect of life. And I've loved the videos I've seen of you calling Apple out, saying, we need more representation in the emojis. The video of you putting makeup on your pointe shoes, I mean, that has millions and millions of views. What can we do as listeners right now to help move that forward?
You know, I think it's so important that people just like have the conversation, share with someone who might have no idea about these things. You know, for instance, with the emoji, really kind of pushing Apple to understand that this is a bigger issue. This is not about, it's not this kind of small view. It's not about a ballet slipper emoji. It's about representation, especially in these spaces for young people where they use these things as a way of voicing themselves, as a way of representing themselves. So it's really about seeing yourself in all spaces. And it seems so simple, but the ballet slipper and the tights are such a big thing. It's such a representation of acceptance in the ballet community. The European pink color is a representation of our skin. And if that's the first thing you're handed at 3 years old, and it's saying, if you don't have this skin color, then you don't belong. I mean, that's huge. And to make these small visual shifts, I think can do so much, especially for the next generation.
As I was listening to you talk about the story in your book, Firebird, about having a role model, I was thinking of this beautiful metaphor for motherhood, right? Mm-hmm. Because we are handed this baby and we only have like what we saw in our own mom or our mom friends. I want to shift and talk a little bit about motherhood. I read this quote in your biography. It says, it was as if I had been doing ballet all of my life and my limbs distinctively remembered what my conscious mind had somehow forgotten. And I immediately thought of motherhood, because even when we don't have, you know, role models or, you know, leave the hospital with a baby manual, sometimes instinct kicks in motherhood. So I'm wondering, did you have that experience or was it all just a surprise?
You know, what's so fascinating is, well, yes, I've had that experience a lot. But what's so interesting is like being an athlete and being a mother, and they feel so connected, being an artist and athlete and being a mother. You know, when I gave birth to my son, I hadn't been on stage for a couple of years because it was during the pandemic. And I had almost forgotten what that felt like, what it is to prepare your body for months and months for this performance. And as I'm going into labor, I'm like, oh, I know how to do this. Mm-hmm. Things just started clicking into place. And I was like, oh, I know the mental preparation. I know what it is to breathe. Like, of course, I did all the classes and my doctor, we practiced all the positions in her office and all these things for pushing. But when it happened, I said, like, I'm going to do it this way. And it's like, I don't need you pushing my legs back. I need that resistance. Like, I immediately kind of tapped into this innate thing. You know, I think that as a dancer, but I think also as a woman, like knowing your body and just kind of figuring things out. And that's what it's been like for me with motherhood. Yeah. Of course, I have an incredible partner in my husband, like unbelievable. We talk about it all the time, just how fortunate we are to like be in this kind of like safe and secure relationship and to be able to do this together and to think about single moms and my mom, who was a single parent raising six kids. And it's just like, how do they do it? You know, but I have such incredible support. But yeah, it's amazing when those things just kind of click in and you're like, what? Have I done this mm-hmm. before? You're like, no, but
it's wild.
Millions and billions of women before me have.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, potty training is one of those things that, you know, I've had seven kids and it's so hard. And every time we start, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. How did I ever do this before? And then it just kicks in the muscle memory, the like, I don't know. It's a thing. I know in dance and developing technique, there are no hacks. It's just putting in the time and putting in the reps. I know you've talked about you will take a class every single day because you've got to keep it all fresh and in your body. But as a mom, we have to find our hacks. I wrote a whole book about mom hacks. And I'm wondering, Misty, do you have any mom hacks for our listeners that you have come up with in the 2 years of motherhood?
Oh my gosh. I mean, to me, it's actually similar to what you're saying. Like, I feel like it takes kind of having those reps to really like understand like, oh, okay, these are the easy things that I don't need to pack a freaking suitcase and carry it with me everywhere with all these things in it. There are tiny little things that you learn about your child or at a certain stage in their life that will work like a hack. Like we were, where were we? We were somewhere recently and I carried like this tiny little backpack with me and I had Jackson's little figurines. It was like a Black Panther figurine in my pocket. And I saw the look in his eyes, you know, meltdown was coming. And I literally just went boop and pulled out the little Black Panther figurine. And it was like done. And it was like, oh, there are like simple little things that you know your child, you're prepared, whether it's having a cracker in your back pocket, it's easily accessible, things like that, that like, I think just knowing your child and getting comfortable in motherhood or parenthood that have been really helpful for me.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The hacks come after putting in the work and in the reps where you realize, oh yeah, there's this little teeny shortcut. I don't need to take a duffel bag with me everywhere I go.
Right.
So good. Misty, I've heard you say that you have been an avid journaler since your teenage years, which I love because I believe it is so important for us to document our life story. Tell me, are you still journaling and what does that look like for you now with your growing family?
Yeah. It's been such a big part of my life since I was really young because again, I was so shy and not very verbal and writing was another form of expression for me. And to be able to go back and look back on those things is really incredible and kind of process it and learn in a different way. I still do journal. It looks different now. I type on the computer or I do it in my notes in my phone, even in my calendar so that I'm documenting dates of things that happen. And then I'll kind of write things within the calendar that just makes sense for me at this point in my life. I'm sure in 5 years, I'll be like, I need to write in a book again or do something different. But it's been really important. And I hope that that's something that I can instill in Jackson too. Even just holding a pen and having a paper in your hand, that is very different from, you know, texting and typing.
Well, one of my mottos is something is better than nothing. In every season of your life, it's going to look different. I love that you're doing it. You mentioned earlier that you are also a chatbooker. Chatbooking is one of my favorite ways to hold on to our family story. Tell me a little bit about that.
It's such a beautiful thing. So I've never been a big like scrapbook person or like I have say photos and things like that. But I think it was more so when I had Jackson that my mother-in-law would just send us the most incredible books. Like I think it's been like every 3 or 4 months, she sends a different book with all of these photos of Jackson. So I was just like really inspired. And then seeing how easy it was with chat books it was just so simple. I was like, how is this easy? Like, I just imagine like in the 90s, like gathering all these photos and uploading them to your computer or something and that, you know, whatever it was, or printing them yourself. And so it was such a beautiful experience. I made my first book a couple of months ago. And we gave it to Jackson as a gift. So it was just pictures of me, him, and my husband. And then it just turned out so beautiful that I printed out like two or three more and sent them around to family members. But it's such an easy and special, beautiful way, like you said, like to just save these memories. Yeah. And for a young person too. So they're not like ripping out the photos. It's like easy for them.
And I don't know if you're to this point where Jackson wants your phone all the time, but you will get to the point where you're trying to take all devices away. So the last thing you want to do is be like, here, look at your family history on my iPad, you know, hand them a book. Parents, we always say parents are our customers, but the kids are the consumers. And sometimes quite literally, they will eat the book. And that's why we have a toddler guarantee. If they eat your book, reach out and we'll replace it. Well, Misty, you're incredible. You were named to the Time 100 Most Influential People list. You have toured with Prince, performed with Taylor Swift. You've earned every top ballet accolade. What is next for you?
I want to grow my family more. That's something you're definitely, you know, like in the midst of working on and continue to, you know, young people, children, like it's really like what keeps me inspired and keeps me going. It's like making, how can we make them better than us? How do we make this world a better place for them and set them up for success? And so, it's more of that, you know, with my foundation, giving more opportunities to young people. I have a children's book that's coming out soonish. It's Bunheads 2. So it'll be my third picture book. So yeah, a lot more creative, you know, kind of putting things out there into the world that's creative and different ways of introducing more people to ballet and showing that diversity can be such an asset in this field and in the world.
So good. And there is no greater creative pursuit than motherhood. Mm-hmm. So I love that you're going to be growing your family. Can't wait to watch. You. Well, you're a delight. Thank you so much for being here, Misty. Where can everyone follow along with the work you're doing?
Awesome. MistyCopeland.com is my website. And then at Misty on Point, that's Point with an E, like point shoes and ballet on all my social outlets.
All right. Perfect. Thanks so much. And thanks for being a chatbooker.
Thank you.
Isn't she so inspiring? Misty is one of those people that could have an enormous ego. She is one of the most famous ballerinas in the world, after all. Yet she is one of the most humble and gracious guests we have ever had on the podcast. I'm excited to watch her continue to make an impact through her nonprofit work and continue to grow her family. So much to look forward to. Thank you for being here and being part of the Mom Force. If you love this interview, be sure to subscribe. You are going to love the episodes that we have coming up. And if you have an extra 30 seconds right now, would you mind rating and reviewing the podcast? That helps us so much. Okay, until next time.